喂呀呦，喂呀哎呀呦，喂呀呦，哎呦，喂呀哎呀呦，喂。
Captain William Clark, March 29, 1805. The ice stopped running owing to some obstacle above. Few Indians visit us today. They are watching to catch the floating buffalo, which break through the ice in crossing. I observed the extraordinary dexterity of the Indians in jumping from one cake to another. Many of the cakes of ice which they pass over are not 2 feet square.
Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai. It was spring, the ice was breaking up in the Missouri, and the river was already falling. Returning geese passed every day. The prairie near the village was on fire on both sides of the river, burned by the people every spring to bring new grass. In the cold, golden afternoon, children watched the white man finish 6 canoes hollowed from the trunks of cottonwood trees. At the white man's fort, the men sorted and packed their goods. During the long Mandan winter, the captains had counsel with numerous Indian consultants who described the northern Missouri landscape and its people. But the Hidatsa had been aloof, mistrusting the Americans. The Hidatsa, or Minnetaree, lived upriver from the Mandan in 3 villages on the Knife River. They depended on the trade from the Assiniboine and Cree, who came from the north to exchange British guns and buffalo products for Hidatsa corn. Few white men had ventured above the Hidatsa villages and knew very little about northern Missouri tribes. Hidatsa warriors, however, were well-traveled toward the west. They had raided the Blackfeet and Shoshone 1,000 miles across the plains. One Hidatsa chief presented the captains with a chart of the river. Departing the Hidatsa and Mandan villages, Lewis and Clark continued their uncharted journey up the Missouri River through the landscape of many tribes. Yet, they never spotted a single Indian. In today's program, we'll highlight 2 of those tribes, the Cheyenne and the Crow. Speaking the language of the Algonquin family, the Cheyenne or Tsitsitas originated in the Great Lakes region, a peaceful village people who grew corn, squash, and wild rice. Southern Cheyenne Peace Chief Lawrence Hart.
Anthropologist James B. Mooney does indicate this. He wrote about us well after the time we found ourselves on the high plains, and he said that the old life is remembered in sacred tradition and would seem impossible of belief but for the documented proof of their former existence. He was really speaking to a radical change that we had made.
The Cheyenne migrated to the Missouri River and lived in fortified villages of earth lodges. Lewis and Clark observed an old village of the Cheyenne on the banks of the Missouri, surrounded by a wall of earth. But it was no longer inhabited by the Cheyenne. Following the buffalo and the spiritual guidance of their medicine men, the people had migrated toward the Badlands and the Black Hills in an effort to live in peace and avoid conflicts with the Sioux. Due to the Fort Laramie and other treaties of the 19th century, a series of forced relocations, and the Sand Creek Massacre, the tribe split between its northern and southern branches. Today, the tribes live on reservations in central west Oklahoma and south central Montana.
The Crow, or Apsiloke, speak a language related to Sioux. Their origins may be traced to about 500 years ago, when they split off from the Hidatsa and wandered carrying sacred tobacco seeds. The tobacco was to be harvested only for its seed. It was said that when the harvest was bountiful and the tobacco flourished, so too would the Crow people. After hundreds of years of traveling, they settled along the Yellowstone River and planted the sacred seeds in northern Wyoming.
Crow elder Barney Oldcoyote.
There were 3 bands, the Mountain Crow, the River Crow, and what they called the Kicton Valleys. Crow country at the time, after their separation from the Hidatsa, they settled here in the mountains of southeastern Montana, beginning at Bozeman and coming this way to the Bighorn Mountains. So what they did was literally guarded the mountains. They didn't have villages or anything, but they roamed that area and kept patrolling. And they shared it with other people. And I characterized them as a true melting pot of Indian people, because they welcomed other tribes. You belong to the Crow tribe as a state of mind, not by blood, not by heritage, not by birth even. People would come to the Crow tribe, and they decided to accept that way of life. They became Crows.
I'm Arlene Sky, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. There are many definitions of warriors and what they represent to the Crow Nation. It's a question that Crow elder and historian Joe Medicine Crow has examined for much of his 90 years, a lifetime which has spanned two world wars, conflicts in Korea, Vietnam, and the Middle East. Medicine Crow's own warrior legacy goes back to his grandfather, who served as one of Custer's scouts. In today's Elder Wisdom, Brian Bull presents Joe Medicine Crow and the warrior code of the Crow Nation.
Joseph Medicine Crow carries his tribal history with care and pride, like an ancient pipe. Once asked to be a consultant for Hollywood's 1942 Custer flick, They Died With Their Boots On, Medicine Crow was let go for not propping up Custer's stature as a heroic figure. Instead, Medicine Crow would later draft a script for an annual June reenactment, which details the Native perspective of the 1876 Battle of Little Bighorn. It has been a headliner event near Hardin, Montana, for 40 years. Medicine Crow's current passion is the keeping of Crow tradition, which begins with a respect for the land.
A Crow chief said that you have come to my country. The maker made it just right and put it in exactly the right place and gave it to the Crow Indians. Then he said, summertime when it's hot down there, we come up here where it's nice and cool and cold streams and grass green all the time for our horses. Then in the fall when it's getting cold up here, we go down to the big rivers, Yellowstone, Missouri, and there the grass is always high. Then in the spring, our women go up these creeks and ravines there and pick choke cherries, June berries. Then, of course, there was always game, the buffalo deer. And a lot of game birds here we call prairie chickens. And, of course, there's fish, trout, all over, all these mountain streams. But the crows rather eat buffalo than sitting fish, you know. But they asked one chief in 1868, where's your land? And he said, my land is where I set my teepee. I use four poles. One pole rests at the western foothills of Black Hills. One pole rests at the shores of the big lake in the mountains, Yellowstone Lake. One pole rests near the great falls of the Missouri River. And one pole rests at the junction of Yellowstone River and Missouri River. That's my land. Huge area.
Medicine Crow says his people have such a love for the land that even the spirits of those long past yearn for it. He recalls a stranger's phone call that led to a significant homecoming for a Crow chief.
One day I got a phone call, and this woman from Virginia said, I've been having dreams of a Crow Indian chief. Try to tell me that he wants to go home. And I asked him his name, and he said, Majeche, Majeche. Said, you know what that means? That there's a place in Wyoming called Matitsi, supposed to mean Majeche, referring to sits in the middle of land. His name is Awechulawash. That's the Crow way of saying. So I said, I check out Matitsi. He gave me an idea that this place is in someplace out here in Wyoming and Montana. So I turned it over to our tribal chairperson, a woman. So they got together and organized this search party. They looked for his remains, and they think they found him, took it back to Crow Agency there, where he was buried, full ceremony, got a nice headstone, and has become a shrine. He wanted to go home, so we took him home.
Medicine Crow says his tribe pays a lot of respect to their chiefs. That's because of the honored role they have in Crow tribal history, beginning in matters of warfare. He says intertribal warfare among the Crows, Cheyenne, Lakota, and Blackfeet gave many opportunities to prove one's courage and skill.
And the Crows, by having acquired the horse and the white man's guns, they started the intertribal warfare, started, got bigger and bigger. And through military activities, Crow boys become chiefs, you know. A warrior has to complete 4 dangerous war acts on a battlefield to become chiefs. But if one man is knocked off his horse on one side, he becomes a trophy, and the warriors on this side, say the Crows on this side, want to go there and touch that man. The first man who goes up there and touch that fallen enemy with a coup stick or maybe a quart here. Don't hurt him, just go back. You get a war deed. But that's a dangerous thing because his buddies, his companions, are right there. They know that pretty soon the Crows are going to come, so they use them as a bait, you know. And maybe that man himself has just accidentally had fallen off his horse and his time's come, so he was loaded his .45-70 and waiting. He must have a hand-to-hand encounter, fight with an enemy warrior and take his weapon away from him, you know, pistol or knife or tomahawk or gun. Do that, you get a war deed. And then warriors organize a war party to go capture horses. Well, you go there into an enemy camp, and it's dangerous to get in there. You know? They have watchdogs, and nighttime they have sentinels. Then the horses are pretty well guarded, stake right close to the owner's lodge. Good horses in there with a rope tied to his neck, leading into the teepee, tied to the owner's arm, you know. So during the night, the horse moves around and wakes him up. So if a Crow were cunning enough to slip in that well-guarded camp and come to one of those things, cut the rope off of that horse, take it away, he'd get a war deed. Now the last one, after you have completed a number of these dangerous requirements, the council of old retired chiefs would select you to lead a war party. So having completed those war, you become a chief.
Joseph Medicine Crow knows what he's talking about. During World War II, he and another soldier helped their unit capture several SS officers at a farm by stealing their horses. Time and technology have changed the way wars are fought now. It's hard to find any soldier counting coup today, when most operations now use airstrikes, smart bombs, and landmines, devoid of the brutal intimacy of hand-to-hand combat. But Medicine Crow asserts that bravery and cunning can still exist in today's warrior. It's a matter of heart and principle he tries to take in all his endeavors.
The word chief is a white man's word. They call these men good men. Good man, he's a good man, meaning he's brave enough to get a war deed.
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is Assistant News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce Tribe. He lives with his wife, 2 kids, and 3 cats in Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up in Sacred Landscape, Judy Bluehorse Skelton explores the concept of natural resources versus natural relations on a Northern Cheyenne reservation. And on Tribal Rhythms, Nico Nguyen visits the Nighthawk Singers for some music of the Crow Fair. This is Wisdom of the Elders. Stay with us.
Chikwa ta mite che kwe ke chak kwa ta mi cha kwe ke ya ta mi ne po kwe ta mi cha vine te we ya vite ta mi cha kwe chipa kwe